Hello to you and welcome to the Jewellers Podcast, the Adelaide edition. So I am in Strathalbyn visiting Heidi Fabian. How are you, Heidi?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Good. Yep.
And we're going to talk about apprenticeships. You know, if you want to have an apprentice or if you want to be an apprentice, what's the starting point, do you think, Heidi?
I think you need to do short courses because a lot of jewellers won't take a gamble on putting on an apprentice at any age if they don't have some sort of hand skills, because every mistake costs money, because we're not talking about, a piece of timber or something like that. It doesn't, you know, we're talking about dollars in wastage and... you know, and the cost associated with even recycling it. So I would suggest to anyone who's looking to get into the trade, do some short courses. That'll also sort you out whether this is something you really want to do, because it is a precision industry. You have to be able to calculate things. So you're going to have to know, you know, maths, basic, you know, maths. So, yeah.
I think that's how a lot of people come into the industry anyway. I don't suppose many people wake up and are like, I'm going to be a jeweller. There's something, they're exposed to some course or tool or something that they're like, oh, yeah, I can get into this. And then that's how, so they're already doing courses generally.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, one of the interns from last year, he's actually a concreter. Yeah. He just was coming and doing back-to-back courses, and then we gave him a 12-month internship, and he's only just now got a job. But I would have to say he's one of the best setters at an early stage in his career, but he's an older person.
Yep.
And our other intern from last year, she was in worked in the HR industry, and she decided that she wanted to work from home, do something creative. Yep. And so she's been she came to 12 months of back-to-back terms, learning from a trade perspective, and then she did 12-month internship, and she's still coming. But she's producing some very, very good product lines that are all her own. So I don't think she woke up one day saying, oh, I think I might be a jeweller.
Yep.
But I think that her desire to work from home helped her to make that decision. I needed something that I can do from a small area.
Yeah. Well, that's how it starts, isn't it? And then you just take over the garage, the house, the roof.
Yeah.
What do you think the prerequisites are in terms of hand skills for doing an apprenticeship?
To do an apprenticeship, technically there are no prerequisites. However, you need to be coordinated. You need to be able to hold a piece of metal in a certain way for an extended period of time while you're sawing something.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to be able to move an item in the opposite direction that you're filing it or emmering it. So there has to be a level of almost cognitive manoeuvrability. You know, they have to be able to be practical.
So, for example, I've seen people who are sawing out coins.
Yeah,
and things like that. Can you think of some practice?
Shapes. Print off some photos, you know, black and white photos, and cut them out of copper.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
How thick do you reckon?
I would do all kinds of thicknesses because you work with all kinds of thicknesses.
True, true.
But I wouldn't shy away from, you know, a 2 mil sheet.
Yeah.
And, yep, you'll probably break some saw blades during that little journey. But you have to be able to do it.
What other training options are there if you can't, you know, if you're going for an apprenticeship and it's taking time and you want to be doing something in the meantime? or you just don't think you can do an apprenticeship?
I have told our young people looking to get into the industry and our older students who want to get into industry, don't set your heart on an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
You know, it's they're as rare as hen's teeth.
Yeah.
However, the foundation of our industry is small business. So aim to be commercially viable in your own right, because if you can do that, you will be an asset to anybody who's going to employ you, because you're going to know the cost of production, you're going to know the standard that it has to be to be able to value add to your employer.
Yep.
And let's be honest, you know, if you can't value add to your employer, then your long-term employment is at risk.
Yeah.
So don't push so much on trying to be an apprentice. Push on the fact that you need to be capable and understand what you're doing to a commercial standard so that you can be commercially viable. And if that means doing back-to-back courses, then do that. If yeah. you can't do back-to-back courses because of, you know, just that general thing called life where you've got to, you know, put food on the table and pay the utilities... Yeah, right. It takes time and it takes practice and it takes, you know, if you get it wrong 7 times, you keep going until you get it right 7 times, one time after the other.
Yeah.
That's one thing that Jacques always tells his students, you know, it's practice, practice, practice. Don't be disheartened if you don't get it right the first time. Because yeah. if you did that, well, you know, you're pretty awesome, but yeah, that's right. very unusual.
Yeah, sure. So, commercially viable, what do you think that means, like in terms of skills?
Well,
or finding out what you can do to provide that.
When we're working with our students who want to be in the industry in their own right, commercially viable means being able to do a job the first time,
yep.
without making mistakes,
sure,
in a timely fashion,
yeah,
and then costing it out correctly. And costing it out isn't just, well, my materials cost me this much and I charge $25 an hour, so that's my cost. That's not your cost. You've got... You've got more than just your materials. You've got your rent. You've got your power. You've got your superannuation. You've got, you know, you've got to have some money there in yeah. case something goes wrong and somebody gets sick.
Yeah.
You have to think of it from a commercial perspective.
Yeah. And wastage.
Yeah. That's it. You got to keep things like that in mind, that you're not wasting your materials.
Yeah.
Having said that, doing it in your own right makes you more aware of that. And we find that people who employ students that have come through our system, they're considered to be of a high standard.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that's come back to us in feedback is that, you know, this young fella, he doesn't seem to have much waste.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So,
and he knows how to position things, or she knows how to position things when she's cutting things out of a sheet. She's not using the whole sheet and putting the thing in the middle,
yeah.
things like that.
So do you think it's slow and steady wins the race? Like, because a lot of people want to be everything all at once, you know, and that's something we've talked about before is in the UK you've got specialists, or certainly in... Andrew Pitcairn was talking about it when he was working there, whereas in Australia, everyone wants to sort of do everything. They need to, but.
I think the original setup of apprenticeships was that you would be in a workshop and then you would get your trade papers at the end of your time, and it would be jeweler-setter. So you would specialise.
Mm-hmm.
In Australia, at the moment, it's just pretty much just a blanket title.
Yep.
So they do have to be able to do everything. But the problem is I don't think that they get the time to actually learn how to do everything properly. So corners get cut.
Slow down, would you recommend? From the ground up? Like
from the ground up.
Saw skills, solder skills.
Yep. 6 months of sawing, you know, 6 months of soldering and learning things inside and out. You know, make sure you had that knowledge, consolidate your projects. Go home and make it. Set yourself up a little workbench at home so that you can, what you've learned at work or in your course, you then go home and you can make it out of copper. You don't have to make it out of silver or gold or anything like that. Make it out of, you know, a cheaper option.
Yes.
Because then when you come to go and do it again the next day, do a written resize, let's say, the next day in 18 karat gold, it's a piece of cake.
Yeah, right.
So your commercial, being commercially viable, even though you slowed down while you're learning, when it comes to actually doing it in the real world, you are time effective.
Yeah.
And you're not wasting things because you are confident because you've done it that many times.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, if you're practicing in copper, measure your wastage each time and see if you can get it down to next to nothing.
Yeah.
So what about the flip side? What's the sort of prerequisites of somebody looking to get an apprentice on?
We generally find employers that come to us seeking someone, they want someone with some basic hand skills. They don't want them to know everything.
Yep.
As an apprentice, they want them to know how to not waste things. They want them to be sensible in their workshop because often workshops are squishy little places out the back of, you know, your retail section.
Yeah.
So the employer, from employer's perspective, they need to, A, have a facility that they can set an apprentice up so that they can work in their own right. There's nothing more frustrating for an employer or an apprentice than when they employ someone and they're sharing the drill, or there's only one solder torch, or there's only one polishing bench, you know, a myriad of different things. So the employer has to have the infrastructure there to take someone on.
Yeah.
And yes, you can grow that. Yep. Totally, you have to be able to grow that. But you have to also be able to engage your apprentice to keep them wanting to achieve that little bit more, to be that little bit better, to achieve that little bit more so that they're getting job satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And as an employer, you're getting a return on your investment, but you're also getting job satisfaction because you're working with someone who clearly is loving the process and loving the learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that comes from the outset of employing someone, you know.
Yeah. And what about, you know, technically what you need to have? You have to be qualified, for example?
This becomes a bit of a bone of contention for some people. Technically, you cannot have an apprentice unless you have your apprenticeship papers in, unless you've successfully finished your own apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Now, the reality of that is, if we did that, half the apprentices over the last, you know, 15, 20 years probably wouldn't have even had an apprenticeship, because back in the day, you know, it was, you know, mum and dad businesses. You know, the son takes it on. He doesn't actually go to trade school. He doesn't really get his trade papers, but he's been at the bench since he was 14 years old.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that he's not a jeweler, or he can't do what he says he can do.
Yeah.
So whilst the government, the training package states that they must be, already have their own trade, the reality is it's not enforced.
Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah, because we were talking before how some really good jewellers we know don't have their papers, but have been doing it since they were 14 and are some of the best.
Oh, yeah.
About.
I know heaps of jewellers, manufacturing jewellers, who just pump out the most beautiful, beautifully crafted work. And they're self-taught or didactic learners. They may have had the opportunity to sit with a jeweller, you know, for a couple of years, and now they're doing it in their own right, but they don't have their papers. But I also know of the flip side of that, people who have their papers yet do not have the knowledge or confidence or understanding of how to even do a simple ring size, yet they've got their trade papers.
Yeah.
You know, I actually can't get my head around that, but it's just a fact of life. And sure. And in those cases, the people who take those people on who have their trade papers but they don't have the skills and the knowledge, the onus then is implied to them that they need to teach this person these skills to this standard.
Yes.
Because they are producing my stock, carrying my name.
Yeah.
So if I don't get them up to speed, then it's going to be a reflection on me as a manufacturing jeweller.
Yeah. And what about, because I don't know too much about apprenticeships at all, so, but I have read that there are grants available. You know, what's the sort of system? What do you have to get in place as an employer to start thinking about getting an apprentice?
So as an employer, you would register with, it's like a training group. You connect with one of these groups. They then give you paperwork to fill out, which goes to the apprenticeship board. You then find yourself an apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sign up with that group. And you select your RTO. Now, your RTO, your registered training organisation, is there primarily to help you as the employer facilitate skills and knowledge to that apprentice, that employee.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, in my opinion, is that the RTOs don't have that commercial viability of having to rely on your commercial skills.
Yes.
So therefore, train commercially to provide these young people or these people with the skills that they require to get their trade papers. And an RTO make their money from training. So yeah. Because they're focused on the making of the money of the training, they will compact and reduce the amount of hours that an apprentice should be having, and they write the funding off that they get for that from the federal government, because it's federal government funding for our industry, which gets distributed by the states. But the RTOs then fritter that away on their cost of production.
Yeah.
And the outcome is that the lecturer doesn't have the funds or their hours allotted to be able to deliver the education that that apprentice requires or that employer requires of them. Because don't forget that when somebody signs an apprentice up, the training package in our industry states that the employer chooses the electives for the apprentice to study.
Mm-hmm.
So they have 10 core units that they have to do, okay, and that goes over Certificate 3 in engineering in our particular trade over all the Certificate 3s, whereas you then have your electives, but your electives are those key things like your soldering, your working with metals, your saw piercing, your practical skills. So the amount of focus that's given to that is then fundamentally reduced. So the funding, as far as governments go, the federal government provides funding, I think it's about $24,000 over the 3 years, to an RTO to provide training for a jewellery apprentice. The employer gets $1,500 on the setup, which is supposed to be used to provide infrastructure in that workshop.
Yep.
And then at the end of the apprentice's years, he then gets, or the employer then gets another payment, I think, of about $1,500. It might be a bit more for that.
So there's something.
There is something. Mm-hmm. But what they don't realise is that because our industry uses precision tools, our apprentices, whatever age, should be getting a tool allowance.
Yeah.
And it's because we're niche market and they say we're a luxury item. Yeah, we're a luxury item, but everybody wears jewellery. Yeah. Doesn't matter whether it's, you know, a noodle necklace or, you know, $180,000 diamond necklace. Everybody wears jewellery. It's a form of personal identification, a personal identity.
Yeah.
It's how we express ourselves. So it is an important part of our society.
Yeah.
And the government, you know, I have hit my head against brick walls for probably 5 years now, pushing for apprentices to have a tool levy. They should have a tool grant.
Yeah. Because the jewellers I've met are a little bit reluctant to share their tools, as, you know,
well, as they should tools, be. Your tools are your tools. You know, I don't share my tools. Jacques has his tools and I have my tools and the two shall not meet, you know. So, and you set them up for yourself, you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And
I think it's a good thing for apprentices to have their own tools because it gives them a sense of practicalness and achievement and, you know, goals, you know, oh, I can't wait to use this tool. I wonder how you use this, you know.
And if I remember when they can get their own hand groove in it.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Jacques has a hand groove in all of his tools. Yeah. That's why no one can really use them because they're all shaped to his hands.
There seems to be an imbalance of those wanting and offering apprenticeships, hey?
There is.
Is that a population thing?
I don't believe so. I think the UK is struggling with the same apprenticeship challenges. Okay. In the US, it's a completely different ethos. So their training systems and their marketing systems, their whole attitude is different on how they approach this particular industry. We are connected with a couple of American jewellers who often they ask us for referrals of jewellers who might be interested to come and work there. We got a guy in California at the moment who's looking for the right person. So that's a career opportunity. And people want Aussies because we're bloody good workers.
Yeah, right.
You know, and especially in an industry like this, you know, there's not big wages for apprentices. So if someone sticks at it and they are good at what they do and they are doing it not only because they're good at it but because they love it, you know, they have that work ethic. And people want people like that.
Yeah.
Internationally.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. And but people can wait 4 or 5 years to find an apprenticeship.
And in that case, I would encourage them, forget the apprenticeship. Yeah. Do it in your own right. If this is what you want to do.
Yeah, right.
Do it in your own right. And this is how you do it. You have to do courses and you have to get your skills up, and if you want to do it on a commercial basis, you have to be taught by somebody who they themselves relies on their commercial resources.
Yeah.
Jacques has pretty much all of his career done mentoring or apprenticeship for people.
Yep.
You know, he has mentored people in Sydney who have gone on to create their own private businesses out of it. You've got Adina Josephs, you've got Renart Designs, and then he's recently been doing the internships. So I think it's important for jewelers to be able to do that, and as a person wanting to get into the industry, find someone that you can connect with. And that's not always easy.
Yeah. But that's an interesting strategy, like, you know, you job hunts in general, you can spend hours a week doing it, and where you could spend those hours a week bashing out some copper.
Yep, honing your skills.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, if have a go, it's not happening, back to the bench.
Yeah.
For 6 months, a year, or whatever.
We have one young fella. He's 19, and he's done a couple of courses with us, and he's actually a tiler. So we might not see him for, you know, a few months, and then he'll come and do another course because he's in between tiling jobs.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And, met people like that and he's only a young kid at 19, and he's having a go. I just think that it would be a great opportunity for young people like that to be given an opportunity. And, you know, whether that is, and it probably needs to come from the training council, whether they set them up so that he does internships in various places and some sort of scholarship to get him across the line so the employer's not having to pay for him per se.
Mm.
But he's earning a wage and he's learning something in the industry. I think that would be a good way to get young people into the industry if they want to, or even older people looking to reskill.
Yeah. So where are you suggesting that could come from government?
It would be good if the government would get on board. Yeah. Government like everything to be done for them before they'll come on board. So it really needs to come from within the industry. Now, the Jewellery Training Council of Australia did table this and discussed similar platforms to help people get into the industry. But as is with all things, you know, you can only hit your head against a brick wall so many times before you say, I can't knock down the brick wall.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know.
You mentioned briefly about mature students as well, because there's a lot of older people coming into the industry who'd love an apprenticeship, but, you know, family commitments, money.
Yeah.
It's just unfeasible.
It is unfeasible. And to be honest with you, a mature age apprentice or taking in a mature age person on, it just value adds to your business because you have that quiet sense of this person isn't going to have to go and find himself every Friday night. You know,
sure.
You don't have those obligations or concerns that they're going to land up to work half cut on the Monday.
Yeah. And there's somewhere in your 20s where you hit rock bottom and then you're like, all right.
I better do something.
better crack on now. So yeah. To get someone past that point is always beneficial because they're gonna work hard.
Yeah, I think so.
What about specialist skills? Engraving, gem cutter, CAD even?
Yes. I think there's a place for everything and new technologies are not anything to be afraid of at all because they don't take anything away from having those basic hand skills.
Mm-hmm.
Back when apprenticeships were initially undertaken and set up, you would come away with your trade papers saying that you were jeweler-setter if you did your apprenticeship through a setting workshop.
Okay.
Or you would have -caster if you came through a casting company, or hand engraver if you came through a hand engraving workshop. But we don't have that these days. Our industry's been terribly undermined by, you know, people who aren't proactively in the industry. They're just on the outskirts doing the teaching, but they're not commercially practicing. And I think that's where our training and education's gone askew.
Yeah.
We've had not enough people who are commercially making, you know, 65% of their income from commercial sales as opposed to 95% of their income from teaching.
So what do you reckon there needs to be a round table between industry and educators? So it's sort of like, you know, this is what's actually happening.
Yeah.
And this is what could work better.
We tried to do that with the Jewelry Training Council of Australia, and we had there was Peter Beck,
yeah,
his, you know, his casting company. We had AJS, Tool Supplying Company, so Andrew from AJS was on that board. Then we had retailers, like jewellery retailers from Toby Ben Simons from Shields. So we had the retail and the wholesale sector participating, and we have manufacturing jewelers, from Martin Rogers Jewelers. We had Grant Wishart from Wishart's Jewelers, and there were a couple of others that were on that panel that we would discuss things with and table things with. And the greatest consensus was, if we want the educational standard and training to be lifted for our industry, we need to do it ourselves.
Yes.
We need to work with an RTO. And we had that all happening with the Academy back in 2015, but then the Queensland RTO pulled out because they didn't get the government funding. Now, that is the key thing that has undermined the industry, the RTOs being actually able to train to what the industry requires, because they're after that buck. They're not after the quality training outcomes. And it has to come down to the training outcomes for the employer, because the reality is, and the apprentice, the employee, because the reality is, if an employer is not getting or seeing a return on his investment, and it's not just the apprenticeship's wages, it's everything else that goes with that, work cover, the cost of their training, because the employer still has to put in even though the government puts in.
Yeah.
You know, it's when the employer is not getting value for his money, and the apprentice is feeling the pressure because he knows he's not getting the knowledge that he or she needs to be getting, or that he's not getting the opportunity to do things to be on a competitive basis, then it's undermining the training. Everybody's just wasting their time.
I'm getting frustrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So we need an RTO to work with that's going to say, we want you to be an industry-driven training organisation, you do the training, we'll dot the I's and cross the T's.
Yeah. Is that a negotiation thing with the government? Could it be funded in other ways? Is that naive thinking that, or, you know?
Well, there isn't any government funding to set up an RTO. You have to fund yourself to set yourself up as an RTO. And just because you're an RTO doesn't mean you're going to get the federal government funding for the apprentices. You have to get chosen for that. Like,
so you're an RTO, are you?
No, we're not.
No?
No.
So someone wants to become an RTO. Who are they? Who's the sort of profile?
Usually it's bean counters, because they count the beans. And
So from education institutions?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Because they're usually the people who are focused on the financial turnover, and yes, that's the end goal.
Yeah.
But it's not the process to be able to value add, to get the skills to get the end goal.
Yeah.
So for them, for an RTO to get its income, it needs to focus on getting those skill sets into these people, so they then go out and employ apprentices, and those businesses grow, because if those businesses grow, they're going to send more apprentices and more trainees to the RTO.
Yeah.
But they go the other way around, because they're looking for the easy quick dollar, which is the federal grants.
Okay.
So to become an RTO, you have to register.
Yeah.
And it was $15,000 to register it back when we were looking at it in 2011. So, and then for
it's a
each
fair amount, but
just to register it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean you're going to get across the line.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, but in Queensland it was a bit different because...
So that's why they're counting their beans, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because...
Where does that money go? 15 grand.
Well, the 15 grand that you as a potential RTO pay, apparently it goes to reviewing all of your units.
Okay.
So... Yeah, I can't really tell you what they do with it.
Yeah, sure.
But
sure.
The people who have RTOs, private RTOs, they generally seek government-funded courses. They seek to be able to deliver those.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, if the jewellery industry is going to make an impact on its own education, it needs to forget about that. It needs to do it in its own right.
Yeah, right.
And take
sounds
control
like,
of it.
Yeah.
But to do that...
Because it sounds like the perfect RTO would be a jeweller or someone who sidesteps from being a jeweller.
Still need to be commercial, and that was the big key with, or is the big key with the AJMD. We are trying to get people out there who are commercially viable in their own right.
Yeah.
They can sell their products from the gallery, so they're making... income, we're still producing commercially, so you maintain that knowledge of what your consumers want, what consumer trends are, how to engage with them, learning about marketing, learning about how to set up your own marketing platforms like Etsy or Facebook or, you know,
yeah.
Just can go on.
Yeah, yeah.
And that all needs to come from the Teaching Institute.
Sure.
So that's where they need to be making their money, not from government funding.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Having a front-facing shop is a great way to support young emerging. We were talking to the Jam Factory whilst here in Adelaide.
Yeah.
And that's a brilliant setup. And there is some government funding there.
For them there is. Because they were originally a government set up organisation.
Sure.
Now, that's all
good.
And
they've been around for a long time. Yeah.
And so they've always been connected into those government funding channels.
Yeah.
And their students benefit from that because they then set them up with grants to go on. Well, as an independent, you don't have that.
Yeah.
You have to know who's doling out the money, and they have to like you. And unfortunately, we've stirred a few pots because we have challenged the status quo on the standard of training that was being delivered from our state.
Yeah, it's very difficult to stir the pot, as you say. Like, I try and be careful with this podcast, to try and keep it positive because, you know, rock the boat too much or upset it, but then sometimes you have to rock the boat.
And I think that was, you know, we are very passionate about our industry.
Yeah.
We're very passionate about our people achieving.
Yes.
That's just, Jacques would just, you know, feed his whole everyday soul into it.
Yeah.
That's the kind of person he is. He always gives back.
Well, that's why I've come down here, because I came to AMJD.
Yeah.
Is that the right way of letters? I always get it mixed up. AJMD.
Yeah.
AJMD. Three or four years ago.
Yeah.
And remember the passion that you spoke about with apprenticeships.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been handing you with emails for... Yeah.
That's all right.
To talk about it, because I heard it. I heard the passion,
yeah,
the knowledge.
We're ready to go. If we had an RTO that said we want to get it on our scope and we want you to deliver it, I could value add to that business in a heartbeat, because the first thing I'd do is I'd go out to all of the jewellers that I know who don't have their trade papers and want their trade papers and get them set up with them. Why? Because then they can take on apprentices and be confident about it.
Sure.
Because it's recognition of what they've already achieved.
A bit of housekeeping almost.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's just a bit of housekeeping. You know, if there's one thing I could tell, or that I do tell and I make happen as much as I can, young people, apprentices or people wanting to get into the industry, get a portfolio together. Document
yes.
all of your little projects so that when you go to a prospective employer, you can say, well, here's what I made. Here was my process. I messed up there, but I know what I did wrong, and redid it.
It's important.
And, okay, yes, there's three of these rings because I made mistakes on that one and that one, but I know that.
Yeah.
And this one took me, you know, instead of it taking me a day, it took me a morning.
Yes.
Or it took me 4 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
Then the employer looks at that portfolio and rings up a few people and says, yeah, righto, there's your bench. Go and make me some money.
So to succeed in anything, you need financial and moral support and, you know, do apprentices look for that in their employer and vice versa?
Young apprentices don't always have the mindset to think, I need to find someone who I can bounce things off or who will mentor me. They don't have that mindset. But as manufacturing jewellers, if you're in a workshop and you have a young person there, take them under your wing, because that thing that you might not think is a big thing might be a big thing to them. It might not seem relevant to you, but it might seem relevant to them.
Yeah.
And they may not know the right question to ask because they are young. For older people who are coming into the industry, again, find yourself a mentor, because it is a new industry to a lot of the students that we have. I think they feel a little bit intimidated.
Yes.
But whilst they're confident in their own everyday lives, this is a whole new different realm.
Yeah.
But they only need to be able to have someone say, do a really good job on that, or next time when you do that,
absolutely,
can I recommend you do that? Or
yeah,
how are you going today?
Because it's a huge mountain to climb, and like you see it a lot, people who've been doing it for 3 or 4 years, mature, coming into the industry, and they're like, oh, you know, I'm not any good, or I'm not going to share because, you know, your stuff's too good and stuff. Like you,
self-conscious.
Yeah. So you could be doing it for years and still not have any confidence that, yeah.
I think that's There's a little bit of artist in all of us who are jewellers, and that is a very strong artist characteristic, you know, not thinking you're good enough or not knowing whether your work, whether other people are going to take it on board.
But with technically as well, but as we've been saying, like shut yourself in a shed for a couple of days.
And just keep breaking saw blades.
Yeah, sure. They're good for mixing glue and stuff.
Oh, no, back in the day you had to solder them back together.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a good thing to get your practice in.
Well, it's a good thing to get your practice in. It's also a good thing to teach you how to swear, but
yeah. Would you use silver solder for that?
Yeah.
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 All right. What stops people from becoming a trainer? We talked a few things like not having papers and not having the funds or the space.
If you think that you might like to take someone on, get in touch with other jewellers. Get in touch with people who have more than themselves at the workbench.
Yep.
Ask them how they went about doing it. Get in touch with places like here, because what we actually try to do is we try and put apprentices with workshops that we are pretty confident they'll succeed in because they're the right fit. And I don't think you get that in many industries. So that's one thing we try and do. Another thing is you really do need to take into consideration the cost of infrastructure. And it's not just the cost of infrastructure straight up. It's going to be the ongoing costs.
Yeah.
It's going to be, okay, if I take on another jeweller, my perishables is going to double. If
it's not just a space and a bench and a hammer.
Right. Yeah. So you need to already have your business plan laid out so that you have prepared as best you can for the future costs.
Yep.
Because having that business plan and marketing plan, because you're going to have to increase your marketing too.
Mm-hmm.
Having that together, you take someone on, you've just got to focus on getting them going. Once they get going, you're already value adding to your business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your ROI, your return on investment will be paramount in the first 8 to 12 months. So your first 3 months is the settling in period.
Yeah.
The next 3 months is, okay, let's get some traction. And by the last 3 months, you really, or the middle 3 months, you really need for that person to be pushing their own barrel. They need to be able to hold their own at the bench close to what your speed and
that's great advice to have some deadlines. To, you know, not let things drag on and...
Yeah, and talk to them about it.
Yeah.
Tell them, okay, if I take you on, this is what I've done ready for you and I'm keen for you to come on. Be positive, because it is a positive thing.
Hmm.
If your business is at a point where, you know, to make or break, you have to grow or diversify, then that's a positive thing, you know. So make sure they're positive and as comfortable as they can when they come in, and get them tracking along your business plan so that they're aware of it. So each goal that you achieve, they achieve it. And if they're achieving and you're achieving, then your business has nowhere to go but up.
Yeah, right. So it's a recommendation to take an apprentice on. It's not something you should be fearful of. Timing is everything, I guess.
Planning is everything.
Yeah,
you need to plan for it, whether you're taking on an apprentice. And even to employers, I would also say to them, don't be pressured to take an apprentice on because they're cheap wages. What you want is someone who's going to value add to your business. If down the track you say, okay, I'm going to take you on as apprentice, you know, in 12 months if we can see that we can sustain it, because... As an employer of an apprentice, if you are to give your apprentice above average wages, apprentice wages, they're going to work harder for you.
Absolutely.
So before you
have loyalty as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
So before you go out on the limb, make sure you've done your business planning. Make sure you've got everything straight. You don't have to take him on as an apprentice straight up.
Mm.
Tell them what you're doing. Communicate with them. Make them feel part of the team.
Yep.
Make them feel part of the achievements and the goals.
Yeah.
You can do that by making a good work environment for them.
What happens when a jeweller takes on an apprentice who are looking for cheap labour, not too much more?
Don't ever come to my doorstop, because... I'll have more than one word to have with you.
Yeah, right.
Apprentices.
What can the apprentices do? Is there a process for them? If they
there's arbitration. Yes.
Okay.
So
it's a hard slog. You don't want to. You know, you got to get the right amount of balance between, like, right. If you're an apprentice, you're going to work hard, but then there's a point where.
But employers should never ever take advantage of an apprentice. You put an apprentice on, or you take someone on, because your business is at a stage where it needs to grow and change
yep.
and evolve.
Mm-hmm.
it is not that apprentice's job. It's a they volunteer to come and become an apprentice, mm-hmm. okay? So they already know that they're going to be on, you know, rubbish wages,
yep.
you know. But if you're taking someone on to grow and develop your business and yep. you've got everything sorted beforehand, then you giving them the right feedback and the right resources to use is only going to benefit you in the long run.
Absolutely, yeah.
But if you take them on and keep them on as a shit kicker, mm-hmm. you know, or a lunch broom cleaner or cheap labour,
yep.
well, don't expect anything back.
Yeah.
Because that's just not how it works. You get yep. You get back what you put in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't,
if you grow with love, then you get love back.
Yeah, yeah. Be positive about them, you know. And don't forget, like, these are babies coming in the industry. You're in a position of, you know, respect where you can,
yeah.
you know, they're yours to mould.
And some of the best apprentices that I've seen or heard about are the ones that have had so much love and support put yeah. behind them.
Yeah.
And then they themselves make your name shine.
Exactly right. That is exactly right.
Yeah.
A good leader does not go 500 yards in the ahead of you. He's beside you all the way. He's making sure that you're staying on track. He's helping you across the line. And you know what? When you take on an apprentice, you really do take on more than just an employee
yep.
because, you know, they're not going to be on the best wages, even if you do, you know, above wages and all the rest of it. You know, it takes time and they're going to have troubles and, you know, if they're still living at home, they might have a tiff with mum or dad or something or, you know, their car might break down and yeah. they may not be real, you know.
Yeah, or they've got problems that aren't age relevant to you. Yeah.
Absolutely. So you kind of have to, more than mentor, you have to very gently parent.
Sure, yeah.
But there are, like, you do have opportunities for arbitration.
Yeah.
So if the apprentice wants to get out of it, whilst an apprenticeship is a contract that you go into and the apprentice goes into.
Yeah.
Which is mediated by that third party that puts everyone together.
Mm-hmm.
Whilst it is a contract, there is arbitration and ways to negotiate things so that everybody can be taken care of. I mean, I yeah. know personally of some apprentices and workplace placements which weren't good fits.
Yeah, sure. Sometimes it just doesn't work.
It doesn't work, and it's nobody's fault, you know, yeah. and it's just a lack of planning, or it could be a lack of, you know, personal similarities or something, yeah. you know, conflicts, yeah. you know. So yeah. what happens in a situation like that is it's up to the training organisation, not the RTO, the training organisation, to...
So the TAFE?
Not the TAFE. No. So the training organisation. So you have your employer.
Yep, yep.
You have your training organisation above that, and then beside the employer is the RTO, because it is the dual activities of the employer and the training organisation that are to give and equip that apprentice with the skills they need
mm-hmm.
to become viable.
Okay.
And it is the training organisation that... work generally as a government representative
yeah.
that oversee that. So if an apprentice wants to leave an employer, they can go to that training organisation and they can explain it to them. There will be a mediation process with the employer, and if the employer says, well, you know, if he doesn't want to be there or she doesn't want to be there, yes. that's okay. She doesn't have to.
Yeah,
so. Good.
Because yeah, it can work the other way around. Yeah.
Everybody has to try and get that apprentice a job.
Okay.
In yep. the industry so that their apprenticeship doesn't get mucked up.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's the onus is not just on the employer, it's not just on the training organisation, and it's not just on the apprentice. Everybody becomes responsible at the end of mediation to resolve that situation.
Okay, good.
If it's the other way around, say an employer, who knows why, hit bad times, the main road was diverted and he had no customers for 12 months, he couldn't keep his employee on. Yes. Couldn't keep his apprentice on. Well, sure. There's also situations that have happened like that. And, again, it is everybody's responsibility to get that apprentice into another job.
Mm-hmm. Is there much variation state to state? Because we've talked a little bit about stuff.
There is. Yeah. And I can speak from experience. I did my apprenticeship in Sydney.
Okay.
Yep.
Because you're from Queensland, are you?
I'm from Queensland.
Yeah.
And then I was working with Queensland RTO to establish the JUI training for them in Queensland. And like I said before, when they decided not to support the South Australian apprentices, I said, well, you know, bugger this for a bunch of bananas, I'm going home.
Yeah.
But in Queensland, whilst all states are audited by ASQA, so all states have a review of certain units within certain training packages and they have to meet certain standards, and that is done by an independent organisation called ASQA. Every state can, and every institution can, say how they're going to collect that data and how they're going to deliver their courses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That causes a great deal of ambiguity.
Yep.
in the delivery of training. I know that Melbourne RMIT,
yes,
their jury department is brilliant.
Yeah,
just
sure,
really, really good.
Yeah,
in more
I've
college.
Had a bit of, FOMO from Melbourne or MIT. Sounds like a great place.
Yeah, and Enmore College, they're pretty good. Queensland, when I was up there, they're pretty good. Like, it was, and it what I was trying to do was to connect as an independent RTO, connect with them so that we could move together, so that we're making sure that nobody was missing out.
Yeah.
But their hierarchy put the kibosh on that because RTOs don't want to work with other RTOs, which is just a bucket of bollocks. Because why would you not get the best people to deliver the highest quality training so that the person coming out of your RTO is the best that they possibly can be?
Yeah.
That's value adding.
So is there anything else that you wanted to add?
I would really, really love to encourage people, jewellers, and when I say jewellers, I'm talking about manufacturing jewellers. I'm not talking about mass production retailers.
Mm.
You know, open your wing and take someone under your wing. If somebody comes in as a bit keen, if you can't give them a job, that's fine. You know, direct them in the direction of being able to be self-learning.
Sure. Go and do this and come back in 6 months.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Or not even come back in 6 months. Just go and do that and then let's just see how you go. You don't have to promise or commit
anything. No. Yeah. There.
But you might be able to help that person on the journey, and they're not going to be in conflict with your business. People are so worried about people being in conflict with their own business. If you're a manufacturing jeweler, people are going to come back to you on the quality of your work.
Yes.
Primarily.
Yeah.
Family jewellers used to be like family doctors and hairdressers.
Yeah.
So
you expand your workshop, you expand your audience, really.
That's right.
So you're expanding your business.
That's right.
Yeah.
So to manufacturing jewellers, I'd say be free with your knowledge, because nobody's going to be able to do what you do, because handmade stuff dictates that everything is individual.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking to get in the industry, I would say do short courses back to back. Don't think you're going to be a jeweler after one course. You know, we've had people, well, we've had people with us for, you know, 3 years and only just starting to establish themselves through Etsy and other platforms. Right. So it's not going to happen overnight. Apprenticeships are still viable, but employers have to do pre-season and plan ahead.
Yeah.
And the training package and the way it's delivered needs a total overhaul.
Yeah.
And all trainers, in my personal opinion, need to be commercially viable.
Okay. Well, is there a mediator?
Well, the Jewellery Training Council of Australia was there for that very purpose, for people to bring their training concerns. I know the JAA attempted it for a while, but it was pretty half-hearted and they didn't engage everyone. And you have to engage everyone. And the problem with that is...
And that's difficult.
Yeah, the problem with that is the cost. You know, like we got Peter Keep in Western Australia. He's a great person to talk to and very insightful. But there are some people who just don't want to come on board because they don't like what you're doing or blah, blah, blah. I think it would be good for the now up-and-coming jewellery schools to get together to be able to, you know, have a set standard. One thing that we had discussed is that for all the apprentices, that each year, each state would pass around their third year or their second year notes and assessment tasks because, so, you know, 1 year South Australia would be doing Western Australia's work and then the South Australian notes would go to Melbourne or to Tassie and to do it that way because that way it validates the educational standard. And all apprenticeship manufacturing items should be reviewed by a trade panel before final end of year assessment each year. And that panel should be made up of manufacturing jewellers who are commercially manufacturing and commercially viable.
Real world.
Real world. And you don't have to have names. You could just have numbers and, oh, yes, that looks really good, or this apprentice, I wouldn't pass him on this because he really should have been able to do that at a higher standard. And then you rotate that from state to state.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would just force our industry, our manufacturing industry, to take control of its own destiny. Yeah, everyone can sit here and grizzle about it all day, every day. But the fact of the matter is, if you're not going to get off your hiney and have a go...
Yeah. Nothing's going to change.
Yeah. Nothing's going to change.
So, in summary, let's... employers, bit of love, loads of planning.
Yeah.
Apprentices, practice.
And then when you're finished, practice again.
Yeah. And then take it to... a jeweler to take part in front of your eyes and give it back to you to try again.
Yeah, but that's done with love. Done with love, that's a good thing. That's constructive. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And to the rest of us, like, have a, you know...
Encourage.
If you're so inclined, have a look at, you know, what's missing.
Yeah, encourage people. And be honest because, you know, you mentioning having your work taken apart and then given back to you, that's also encouraging as much as it's discouraging because if you don't know what you don't know, how can you improve?
Yeah, absolutely. And what we're talking about there is when I set a stone and I gave it to a jeweller and he got a pair of tweezers and just picked the stone out. I was like, oh. So it's gonna happen.
And to training organizations, I would say forget about government funding and do the job right. Do the job that employers engage you to do. Just stop fluffing about because all you're doing is wasting time and money.
Get go and talk to jewelers.
Real get real.
Go talk to jewellers, find out.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they'll get a bit of feedback from the industry.
Sit down and make at the bench.
So
do timed exercises yourself, and then understand from an employer's point of view what goes into having to train.
Yeah.
It's not just teaching you from a book. It's more than that.
Beautiful. I think that was quite thorough, hey? Thanks so much, Heidi.
Pleasure.